Hello, this is episode 7 of the Sleep to Healthy podcast titled Sleep for Work Wellness. I'm your host, Dennis Trumpy, and my goal is to help improve your sleep for your better health and well-being. In my past life, I was an operations engineer responsible for a facility that ran around the clock. When I oversaw a project, I often worked crazy hours and remember once staying at work for more than 30 hours straight. In retrospect, I posed a danger to myself and my coworkers and made some dumb decisions, but at the time, I thought I was the hero. Employers often look on sleep, the non-activity that stops them from getting maximum production from their staff, as the enemy. But treating sleep as an adversary can have dire consequences such as accidents, critical errors, and social unrest, not to mention lawsuits. In this episode, we have the privilege of discussing work wellness and sleep with Carolyn Schur. Carolyn has decades of experience in a broad array of sleep issues such as sleep disorders, fatigue, sleep chronotypes, and sleep issues for women, children, and seniors. But she is especially focused on today's topic of sleep and wellness issues in the workplace. Ms. Schur is an author of 4 books, including Working Around the Clock, A Survival Guide for Shift Workers, and Alert at Work, Keys to Managing Sleep and Fatigue in the Workplace. She gives presentations, workshops, and consultations throughout North America. And she joins us today from Saskatoon, Canada. Carolyn, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today, and welcome to this episode of the Sleep to Healthy podcast.
Thank you very much, Dennis. It's just great being with you. I enjoy every opportunity to talk about sleep, so thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, I only wish I had access to someone like you back in the day when my team worked shifts every hour of the day. But before we get into the technical stuff, can you tell us about yourself and what you do outside your professional life?
Well, I'm a wife and a mother, and I find that actually I'm of that generation now where lots of my time gets consumed with, being in the what they call the sandwich generation. You still have... we have a son. Our son is an adult, but we have both my husband and I have elderly parents. But other than that, I love to walk. I love to be in nature. I love to take advantage of everything that Saskatoon has to offer. And I'm a news junkie. In the last while, there's just been all kinds of news. And so I'm just always curious about the news and kind of knowing what goes on in the world. So, yes, that's how I spend my time.
Yes, it's a wonderful time to be a news junkie. And Saskatoon's a great prairie city to live in. And I'm glad you make the most out of living here.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things that I'm not originally from Saskatoon. But I always say to my husband, well, and to others, that it was not hard for me to make the decision to come to Saskatoon because it's just, having that river and all the amenities around the river is just fantastic.
In some of your work, you have told about your struggle as a night owl working in an early bird society. Can you tell us a bit about that experience?
Well, that's kind of the defining experience of how I got into doing the work that I'm doing, and it kind of evolved. But I did find very early on that, I had the typical teenage experience of not being able to wake up for school or at least wake up in enough time. And in our case, we had to get on the bus early as well. So it kind of started there. But in the workplace, well, and then I did notice it at university because it was, I had classes at 8:30 in the morning. And so I was always, coming late to class for that. But those things didn't seem to be, that wasn't the most critical thing. It was not until I actually started to be gainfully employed, that it became really obvious that my sleep-wake schedule was not going to work with trying to get to work on time. And so that started to cause problems. I was, you know, called into the office, if you will, and my, you know, lateness for work was noted and all of that kind of thing. So that was becoming, you know, very frustrating for me. And what was most frustrating for me was everyone was so focused on what time I was coming to work. But when everyone else left at 4 or 4:30 or 5 or whatever, they didn't see that I was there working for another hour or two. And I always had my work done. And so I started to focus on this idea of, you know, why are we focusing on what time I'm coming to work rather than focusing on the work that I'm doing? And so at one point I did say to one of my employers, you know, is my work adequate? Am I reaching the goals that I'm supposed to be reaching? And because I was in management positions. And so it was, you know, are there complaints from the staff? Are there complaints from the clients? No, everything was fine. The work was great and all of that kind of thing. But it was just that I wasn't coming in when everyone else was coming in. So that's just an example of how things went. And so it was a great source of guilt for me. But once I started focusing on what is the work that I'm doing? And if I'm doing good work, then I started to be less concerned. And then after a while, I started to actually say, no, I'm not going to be there for the 8 o'clock meeting. And of course, people's eyebrows would get up. But when I let the guilt go and started to focus on the work and the productivity and achieving the goals, then I could feel better about myself. And then I didn't care so much. I frankly got into a position that said, if you want to fire me, fire me. But if you want to focus on the work that I'm doing and the benefit that's accruing to the organization, then, you know, great. And I will come in at a time that works for me when I can be productive.
So it sounds like, in a sense, you solved the issue partly by assertiveness and partly by just being willing to put that boundary up, and, well, actually partly by just doing good work so people couldn't argue with you too much.
I think that's really the key, because, you know, we may talk a little later in the podcast about flexibility of work schedules. And so that kind of seed that got planted with me, you know, I now in many organizations, the idea of having flexible work hours and really focusing on getting the work done, regardless of where you happen to be, whether you're in the office or not, or what time you are doing that work. So that very much is the focus. Let's focus on our goals and our, you know, the goals and the outcomes that we want to achieve, and less on the time.
Right. And it seems to me that we have a work-sleep interaction to deal with. Poor sleep can impact our ability to function well at work, and the workplace can impact how well we sleep. I'd like to start with how inadequate sleep can impact the workplace. From the worker's perspective, why should they care if they're getting too little sleep? How might it negatively impact their experience of work?
It has a big impact for the worker themselves. You know, just think about if you haven't had adequate sleep, just think about how you feel. I just wrote something the other day about, you're probably familiar with the fairy tale or the movie Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And they're sleepy and grumpy. And that's how we are, is, you know, we come into work, we're sleepy and we're grumpy. And we tend to focus on, you know, the productivity issues. When you're very sleepy, you just simply cannot do your best work. But there is this other outcome of interaction with others. And so conflict with others becomes much more of a factor when you are grumpy and you just don't have the energy to interact with others. And so the more rested you are, the better frame of mind that you're in. And so these interactions just become better, more productive interactions, and you avoid the opportunity for conflict and misunderstanding just because you don't have the energy to actually deal with somebody bringing an issue to you. You know, you're an example, you were saying, of being a, you know, a manager of a large operation. And you can imagine during the course of your day where, you know, for the 80 or 90% of the time, things run smoothly, but there will always be issues and problems that come up. Now, if you're very sleepy and don't have the emotional wherewithal, when somebody comes to you and says, oh, by the way, we have this issue here, it's that idea that when someone then brings an issue to you and you don't have the emotional wherewithal to, you know, deal with a problem or something that has come up, you know, so then the interaction is not good. So we have those two issues from the worker's perspective of you don't do your best work, you don't feel well, but you have this opportunity of not having very good interactions with your colleagues either. So those are just the immediate things.
Yep, and I agree, you know, we focus on the productivity, but it's a lot more than that. Now for the employer, what are some of the negative consequences they see when their staff are not getting enough sleep?
Well, for the employer, there are two primary issues. One is safety and injuries, and the other one is the costs of healthcare and workplace insurance. So when employees are sleepy, they are much more at risk of making mistakes, causing injuries, causing accidents or incidents. And, you know, that has to be of consequence to the employer. The other cost is the healthcare costs, because sleepy employees are subject to much higher rates of sickness and absenteeism. So that comes in Canada, it's, you know, maybe we don't pay as much attention to that because we have public health care. But in countries where there isn't public health care, where those costs are coming directly from the bottom line of the employer. But even with where you have public health care, many employers still have, you know, additional health care for which they pay at least some part of it. So those are the biggest costs for the employers.
This show will only become as good as the feedback I receive from you. Yes, I do mean you. If you want this show to become more and more focused on giving you value, please send me your constructive criticism and compliments. Go to sleepthehealthy.com, where you can choose between phone number, email address, and feedback form. Thank you for choosing to take the time to support this free podcast. Now, looking at it from a more positive perspective, what are some of the benefits that a worker might experience if they were able to improve their sleep?
Obviously the first benefit is you just feel healthier, you're in a better frame of mind, you can be more productive, and, you know, just do your work the way that you want to do it. But some of the other outcomes are things like increased creativity and ability to problem solve. One of the outcomes of sleeping is that, without getting into the mechanics and technicality of it all, is we become just emotionally and mentally refreshed. And having had that, our ability to be creative, to solve problems, is enhanced. So if you really want to shine at work, you know, the more that you can present this kind of quality in your workplace, you know, the better off that you are. And then, you know, as I said before, having just better interactions, being able to be more able to problem solve and deal with issues as they come up, because you are in a better frame of mind, because you feel healthier. So you're just able to contribute more, have better relationships, be more creative, and really shine at work, you know, and start to get those promotions.
Yep. And I was thinking when you were talking earlier about accidents, that it's not just physical errors of workers that are doing physical work, but it can also be technical or quality issues of people that are doing office work. But further to why employers should care about the sleep health of their staff, does it make good business sense to make the changes necessary to have staff that are well-rested? Is there a return on investment?
Yes, there is. And I don't have data at my fingertips, but there is a lot of data that does show, and it's primarily in these costs, in these bottom line costs of the costs of healthcare, the costs of sick time, the cost of absenteeism and having to, you know, have additional people in. And there's also a cost of turnover. Sleepy people, and, you know, particularly those sleepy people who have sleep disorders of some kind that are not diagnosed and are not treated. And insomnia is a big example of this. The cost of turnover, because those people just cannot continue to manage day after day, week after week at work, and they end up going on sick leave. They end up sometimes even leaving those jobs just because they don't have the physical and emotional and cognitive capacity to be able to continue to work. So those are very bottom line costs for employers. But there is also a cost, and we tend to put our head in the sand about this. If you are an employer where there are accidents or incidents or deaths, you quite often take a hit to your brand. You know, that's a cost that's very difficult to, you know, put into actual numbers. But it does say something about the organization and how it's managed. One of the other things that comes up is in recruiting, you know, word kind of gets out that that's an organization where, you know, people don't get adequate rest. There aren't good shift schedules. You know, people do get injured. You know, prospective employees hear that. They know that. And so then it becomes difficult to recruit the people that you need. Because they're just leery about being in an organization that, you know, doesn't really care about their health and ability to sleep. And primary to that health is having adequate rest and sleep time.
Yeah, and with I have a sidewalk business that I own and operate during the summertime, and safety is such a huge issue. I was thinking with your comment about brand awareness, that if I ever have an accident, I mean, that is a huge, that my organizations, especially municipalities that hire me, that is a huge issue for them. And that would probably devastate my bottom line. And my guess is that many employers don't realize that they might be contributing to sleep issues of their staff by having a workplace that makes it difficult for their staff to sleep well. So do workplaces impact the sleep of their staff in a negative way?
Oh, absolutely. There's just no doubt about that. And they do it in a number of ways. They do it by having very stressful workplaces. So if your workplace is stressful for whatever reason, you know, because of demands on production or interactions with employees or a boss who's you know, a dictator or, you know, so any multiple of reasons that can cause this kind of stress in an organization. And stress is, like you're saying, that interactive relationship with sleep and work and work and sleep. You also have that with stress and sleep and work. You know, you're stressed at work, so now you don't sleep very well. So now you come to work, you're more tired, and you're more tired, so now you're more stressed. So that whole thing goes on. But the other a really big contributor of sleep issues for employees is overtime and on-call work, where there is an expectation for what I call an excessive amount of overtime. You know, there's always going to be situations where, you know, we've got a project today and it has to get done, and we have to push through a little bit. That's always going to happen. But where there is an expectation of excessive work, excessive overtime, and I've seen many organizations like that, then, you know, that obviously then the employees just do not have adequate rest time. So that becomes very much of a factor. And, you know, one of the things that happens, and this is kind of a tangent to your question, is that where there is excessive overtime, employees sometimes become their own worst enemies, because there is the lure of money. And I've been in many organizations where excessive overtime is expected. And, you know, but when we work with the employer and say, you know, maybe we ought to rethink this, the employees are the ones that get all their, you know, up in arms, because they count on that extra money for all their, you know, what I call their big boys, the boats and the trips and, you know, all of those kinds of things. So it's a bit of a, you know, kind of goes both ways.
Yes, I definitely see that in the construction industry. And often in the media, I see a tug of war in issues like this. If we tell staff what they can do to improve their sleep, then we're putting the onus for change on the worker and implying that the employer is not responsible. If we tell employers to improve the workplace for the sake of sleep, then we're saying it's the employer's fault that staff are not sleeping well and letting staff off the hook. Do you see this in the workplace? And if so, how do you resolve it? Who's responsible for what?
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely see that. And I think it rests with the employer to set the tone. But I know I start every presentation about shift work. I always start by saying, you know, if we are going to have a healthy shift work workplace, we need to have the two branches, if you will, working together, because the employer can do everything that they can in terms of good schedules and all the other things that we're looking for a healthy shift work workplace. But if the employees are out there having, you know, multiple jobs and not protecting their sleep and all of those kinds of things, then it's kind of for naught. But on the other hand, if the employees are, you know, doing everything they can to protect their sleep and come to work rested, but they come to a situation that's highly stressed, has bad schedules, lots of overtime, that's not going to work either. So the two of them definitely have to work together. But I remember being asked to do a presentation in an organization, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school to say that it was in correctional services. And as soon as I got into the room, I could tell that there was, you know, not a very welcoming atmosphere from the people in the room who were all employees. And what I, you know, sort of through the course of the presentation, I came to realize that, and these employees actually outright said, we don't know why we are being told how to sleep better or whatever when our employer is imposing these. And actually, I sometimes see what I call schedules from hell. And this was an example of where they actually had schedules from hell. And excessive amounts of overtime, really bad employee-employer relationships, all kinds of grievances being filed. So it was really quite a toxic workplace. And so in a situation like that, I was supposed to do a series of these presentations at a number of different facilities. And right after the first one, I went to the client and I said, you know, is this what we're going to find in every workplace? Because if that's the case, I'm not doing this. I am not going to walk in to an organization and say to employees, this is what you need to do to fix your sleep, when on the other hand, you are doing everything possible to make sure that they're not sleeping well and creating this toxic workplace. So for me, even though there is, you know, the two branches, the employees and the employers, or employees and employer, I do think that it does have to start with the employer. The employer has to set the tone. And then, you know, if some employees aren't doing something to protect their sleep, and then the employer has an opportunity to say, no, we need to, you know, look at this. But otherwise, the employer, you know, becomes the bad guy and it just doesn't work.
I encourage you to sign up for our newsletter. You'll receive a summary of each podcast as it comes out, so you can decide whether it is worth a listen or not. Also, you will receive tips on how to improve your sleep. Go to sleeptohealthy.com and sign up today. Okay, thanks for that clarification. For this episode, I would like to focus on what a good sleep-friendly workplace might look like. And you've broken this down into four broad areas. Firstly, facilities and service. Second is to provide sleep education. Third is policies and procedures. And fourth is operational considerations. So let's start with number one, to provide facilities and services conducive to good sleeping. What does that mean?
Well, these are things that an employer can do by design to make sure that employees have what they need to make sure that they don't get, and this is particularly at the workplace, obviously. So we're not concerned about, you know, what the employer can do to ensure adequate rest away from work and adequate time for sleeping. But at the workplace itself, how can the employer support people who, you know, to avoid becoming very fatigued at work? And so one of the primary things that an employer can do here is to make sure that employees have access to adequate sources of food and healthy food so that they can sustain themselves through their work period. Now, you know, workplaces vary so much that it's difficult to prescribe something for every single workplace. But in those situations where you can, to ensure that, you know, people have sources to food and snacks, which will help them not overcome sleepiness, but overcome physical and fatigue particularly. So that's an important one. But really, in terms of how the employer approaches management of their facility, is to ensure that employees have adequate rest breaks and have frequent rest breaks. We tend to just have this attitude that employees can just keep working and working and working and working, and they can't. We have a natural physiology where the brain especially can only handle so much information, and then it just kind of needs to take a break and just go, no, I can't absorb anymore. And physically, we all know the feeling of our muscles working and working and working until at some point we just go, no, I'm just done. I can't do this anymore. So we need these breaks, and we need them frequently. So I always suggest that at least every 90 minutes that people have like a 15 or 20 minute break so that both our muscles and our brains can have a rest and kind of regenerate. And if we can have a bit of a snack, and then we're good to go. But sometimes even within that hour and a half, you know, depending on the intensity of your work, you might need to have like just a 2 or 5 minute break just to get refreshed and keep going. And one of the other things about facilities is providing resting facilities. We've now come to know that many, many organizations have what used to be called napping rooms and still are called napping rooms in lots of places, but they are now being expanded out, being called wellness rooms or quiet rooms, somewhere where people can have a space where they can just go, I just need, you know, 15 or 20 minutes to just kind of regenerate, collect my thoughts, you know, have a quick nap, and then I'll be good for work again. This is still completely controversial with lots of employees, but it's becoming much, much more common, and people are recognizing the value of it. Ironically, in those situations and those workplaces where there are long hours of work, so in technology companies particularly, but I can think of even, you know, in an oil field, could an employer provide a space which is, you know, quiet and warm, where an employee can just go, no, I just need 15 minutes, 20 minutes so that I can just regenerate so that I can get back and work. Otherwise, I become more and more of a threat for an injury or an accident.
Just out of curiosity with those resting facilities, because while you're talking there, I was thinking of introvert, extrovert. Do introverts take advantage of those facilities more than extroverts, do you know?
That's a really interesting question. I don't know, but I could see, particularly where we have these, you know, open workspaces or where an introvert is having to interact a lot. My husband comes to mind, where my husband is an introvert and he knows how to balance his own energy. And when he is having to deal with a lot of clients all day long, he just knows to walk into his office and like close the door because he knows that he just needs that time. But I don't know any data on that, but it's a really good point. I think for sure that that would be the case where they need some place to just be by themselves for a few minutes.
Yeah, when I was talking to somebody about talking to you about this episode, is they had mentioned that one of the new high schools in our area here, that they actually have a resting room in the high school for the teachers. I believe it's for the teachers. I never asked whether it was for the students as well. But the second item on the list there was to provide sleep education. So what topics do you suggest covering and why?
Well, one of the first topics that I would suggest covering in the workplace is just simply talking about the benefits of adequate sleep, so that employees know that sleep isn't an option. Sleep is something that you absolutely have to have. And we tend to think of sleep as a throwaway. I'll get to it when I've done everything else. So employees need to be educated because we are still very, very lacking in education about sleep and the value of sleep. So that's the very first thing. You know, an employer could have really good practices, but if the employees aren't going to choose to sleep, then it really doesn't matter. So just that would be the starting point. Let's just talk about sleeping, the value it brings to the employee, particularly, and start with that. The other issue I find is just education about sleep disorders. Lots of people are familiar with a disorder like sleep apnea, but there are many other disorders that are at play. People don't know about them. They struggle with this. They don't get adequate sleep because of the sleep disorder. And even though they are trying to sleep, which becomes very frustrating, and it's, you know, information about sleep disorders is commonly available. You know, I can do a 1 hour presentation on it. It's very quick. So it doesn't take a lot of effort, but it has a lot of impact just because people start to recognize that, oh, yes, you know, I could be subject to that disorder. They can all be, fairly easily treated, diagnosed and treated. And that has a big payoff. But the other things that are important in terms of education is talking about fatigue management and how do you maintain alertness in a workplace when you have, when you know that people are going to be coming to work sleepy. And so that education about how do you maintain alertness. And so maintaining alertness is not just recognizing sleepiness, but it's also recognizing fatigue. We tend to talk about those things as though they are the same thing. They are not. And so I like to focus on how do we maintain alertness? And that has a big payoff too, because again, this is simple, easily presented information. It doesn't take a lot of time, but it has a big outcome. And because of what I said about the impact of stress on sleep, anything that you can do to, you know, educate employees about how to manage stress and recognizing that getting adequate sleep is one of the tools that you have to manage stress. So simple things, but very effective.
You may be listening to this podcast on your computer, tablet, or phone through our website or as an MP3 file. But there is a much more convenient method, a podcast app. Sign up today on your favorite podcast app and never miss an episode. Or visit us at sleeptohealthy.com for simple instructions on how to find an app and subscribe to the podcast. Yeah, those all make sense. And certainly I know in my life that sometimes I'll just learn about something that can be a real life changer, and something like sleep disorders. I could see somebody suffering from something like that, especially since you're not conscious while it's happening, yet you could recognize it if it was presented to you.
Now, one thing I'm just going to add to that is we're talking here about providing education for employees. But I also really see the need of providing education to employers and safety supervisors and HR professionals, because they need to also know that any policy that they implement or whatever is going to have an impact. And we can maybe talk about that a bit more. But all of those management and professional people in the organization need to have education as well.
Yeah, and the third topic there is policies and procedures that can help create well-rested staff. And you'd mentioned earlier on about the correctional facilities where it seemed ingrained into the corporate culture to be counter-sleep. So what do you recommend in this regard?
Well, in terms of policies and procedures, again, when we're just focusing on employees, is do any sleep disorder screening? Because that's a policy that you can easily implement as part of your health and wellness screening. So that's easy, you know, has a lot of payback. And in regard to sleep disorders, then providing support to those people who have insomnia. And oftentimes we see these people as taking a stress leave. They may be on sick leave. So providing some support to them in terms of how to manage, you know, stress and their burnout issues and those kinds of things. We need to incorporate that into your health and wellness policies. But from an actual organizational policy, I talked before about flexible schedules. The more that you can implement flexible scheduling has a great deal of value to employees. And it has value, as I was saying before, in promoting good sleep, or at least getting adequate sleep for a lot of employees, whether they're night owl types. But it's also like people who are parents or people who have other responsibilities, like I was saying about doing parental care, for instance. that the more flexibility they have, the more they feel in charge of their life. And if they can feel more in charge of their life, they feel less stressed, they can sleep better, they can sleep in on a morning or two when they feel that the need for that. So flexible scheduling just has a lot of benefits if an organization can see their way through to do it. Within this category, we're also talking about napping policies. Maybe you don't have an actual napping policy that allows people to nap. One of the things that I find about napping in the workplace is that people will say, oh, yeah, we have a napping policy. And, if we feel the need for a nap, we can just, kick back in our chair or, find a quiet space or something. And I really object to that kind of uncontrolled napping policy because I think it creates other issues around safety and security for everyone. So I think that we need to have controlled policies so that, people know how to ask for it, to say, this is what I'm doing, this is why I need a nap. But if you can see your way through to having a napping policy or to, as you're, said earlier about having the restroom, not a restroom as in a bathroom, but a resting space where, someone can just be away from the madness for a bit, that'd be great.
So I imagine listeners and myself are pretty curious about a napping policy. So what are some of the elements of a good napping policy?
A good napping policy has a number of factors. The first is that the employee actually say to a supervisor, I need a nap, so that we know that that's where that particular employee is. Secondly, that the nap be no more than 20 minutes in the workplace. I have had situations where this happened to be a nurse in a healthcare facility who said, oh, I'm so glad that you're talking about napping because that's what we're trying to do in our workplace. So I said, well, how are you doing that? And she said, well, we combine our lunch, the time that we have allocated for lunch as well as our breaks. And that gives us a total of an hour and a half. And we combine that time and we go and have a nap. And I said, no, in my view, that does not fly. When you are sleeping for an hour and a half, you are making up for sleep deprivation. The employer doesn't have a responsibility to help you make up for sleep deprivation. The employer has a responsibility to make sure that you are safe in the moment, and a 20-minute nap is going to be adequate to ensure that you get that quick refreshment. 20 minutes, that's what you're allotted, and you're allotted only one nap period per shift. That's just the primary ones. And the other one is that your nap be away from your workstation. And so this idea that you just put your head on your desk, no. I'm in favor of napping at your workplace, but I am not in favor of napping at your workplace, if you know what I mean. If you are going to nap, you need to step away from your work. And even if that means just having a recliner in your office that is your napping place, or you have a yoga mat beside your desk, but you are not napping at your workplace. The two start to blend into each other, and then it's very easy to, just kind of doze off at any moment. And we don't want that. We want very specific time where a supervisor knows that that's what you're doing and that's where you can be found and so forth.
Well, that's funny. He just brought back some memories for me because when I was a manager, I used to keep a pillow underneath my desk where nobody could see it because we would never have a napping policy back in those days. And I would flop the pillow down on my desktop and close the door and have a whatever 15, 20 minute nap. But So finally, what do you mean by operational considerations when it comes to sleep?
Well, there are a number of things. We've talked about the extent to which you have a stressful workplace. So, you know, as a manager, as an HR professional, if you have a very stressful workplace for whatever the reason, you know, then that is something that you need to do as kind of a proactive measure to ensure that employees are not in stressful circumstances that are then affecting their ability to sleep. Reducing overtime for me is just a huge one. I just think as long as you maintain ongoing and expected overtime procedures, then you're just asking for trouble. And I know people say, oh, that's just a function in our industry. You know, that's just the way it is. And employees don't mind because they like the money and so forth. But that, you know, you can only keep beating the horse so long. And you're going to find that if you actually look at your turnover, you look at your accident rates, you look at your use of sick time, you look at your health costs, that, you know, the ROI is just not really there if you have a persistent overtime kind of expectation. But then the other thing that, you know, feeds that whole overtime situation is not having adequate staffing. And this is something that happens in, you know, it's pervasive in healthcare, where we keep cutting staff, we keep cutting positions, and then the employees that are left there are then just, you know, running off their feet. You know, this is one of the things that I find really difficult, is to stand in front of a group of healthcare employees and talk about the importance of having a rest break. And they look at you like, you know, like in what hemisphere do you, you know, stratosphere do you live in, thinking that we're going to get a rest break? You know, we not only don't get our allocated coffee or coffee breaks, you know, we don't even have time to stop between patients because we are constantly running from one to the other. So we don't even have time to go to the bathroom, for goodness sake. And the more that we cut back and cut back and cut back on staffing, then, you know, then the overtime becomes a factor. But even just in that shift, you are going to have an employee who does not have time to, you know, take a break, to take a breath, to go to the bathroom. So this is going to be a very fatigued employee. But this employee is probably also covering this shift on one of their days off because there is no one else to cover, because there isn't adequate staff. So they're working overtime for all of those kinds of reasons. So having adequate staffing, and I know that there's dollars attached to that, but if you look at the dollars that you're spending on sick time and absence and injuries and workplace compensation costs, you know, you'd probably see that if we spent that money proactively, we wouldn't have to spend it reactively. If you are in a shift work workplace, then having best practice shift work schedules is really essential. You can solve so many problems with good shift work schedules. But unfortunately, we still do have organizations that if they don't have the schedules from hell, then they do require, for instance, you know, where you and I live, Dennis, where we have the a lot of mines, a lot of oil field work. It is very common for employees in those workplaces to be working 7-12-hour shifts in a row. And, you know, that they make all kinds of business reasons for why they have to do that. But that is a very very fatiguing business practice. And so I really encourage employers, whenever possible, look at, you know, best practices for shift work scheduling, where you're not going to have that extent of sleepiness and fatigue, and people will be more well rested, and you know, all the benefits of that will accrue to the organization.
Right. Well, you've covered a lot of territory today, but as we wrap up, what is one thing our listeners could do today to improve their sleep tonight so they can feel better tomorrow?
Wow, that's a good one. If you're going to improve your sleep night, I would say look at, this will be two things. Look at managing your stress and look at the possibility that you may have a sleep disorder if you are not sleeping well. If you are, for the most part, sleeping well when you do sleep, you are just not getting enough sleep, then I would say make it a priority to do what I call choose sleep before chores, and actually say, no, I'm going to give myself the gift of sleep today. I think that would be important.
Yeah, I like that. That comes out of one of your books that you wrote on about sleep before chores. And where should people go to learn more about you and the resources that you have available?
The easiest way is just to go to my website, carolynshure.com, and you'll find there lots of printed resources, things about presentations. You'll also find there like a wealth of articles on all these topics that we've talked about today. You'll find a podcast, again, with lots of just 2-minute topics on our 2-minute little presentations on all of these topics. So yeah, just go to the website, carolynshure.com, and everything is there for you.
Great. And as always, we will have the links to the website and the books and the show notes on our website at sleeptohealthy.com. If anyone's interested in improving their workplace by tapping into Carolyn's wealth of experience, they should get hold of her through her website or following the episode links on sleeptohealthy.com. Carolyn, this was a niche topic, and yet I think it impacts virtually everybody in a very big way. Thank you for giving up your valuable time for the benefit of our listeners and imparting practical advice for staff and employers alike.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity, Dennis. As I said, I'm happy to share information about this anytime. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Let's summarize some of the key points Carolyn made today. The first is that it would be helpful if we could take some of the stigma out of different sleep-wake needs. When I kept the pillow under my desk, it was to take a brief 15-minute nap so I could get more done and do better quality work. I kept the door shut because I didn't want to get caught knowing what the rumor mills would produce and what my boss's reaction would likely be. As an employer, I don't want my staff taking advantage of free naps, and I don't want non-nappers to resent the nappers. But this is manageable, and we could have better workplaces with a little more empathy and flexibility for others. The second is that there are policies, procedures, tools, and so forth available if you want to have a bit more sleep-friendly workplace. You don't have to start from scratch. There are even templates for contentious issues such as napping policies. The third is the interaction between the design of the workplace and staff's quality of sleep. They impact each other. Deterioration in one most certainly leads to worse outcomes in the other. Improve one, and you potentially improve the other. I hope this summary helped you remember key topics from today and leads you to a path of better sleep and maybe a better workplace for your sake and the sake of your workmates. As always, you can find detailed show notes about the interview with Carolyn Shure along with links at sleeptohealthy.com. This podcast is not a substitute for advice from a qualified healthcare professional. The sole purpose of this podcast is to educate and entertain. As we do not know your particulars, we cannot and do not provide professional or medical advice or services. We strongly encourage you to consult a healthcare professional before incorporating any ideas in this podcast. Listeners who use the information in this podcast do so at their own risk. The guests on this podcast express their own opinions, beliefs, and conclusions, which is neither supported nor opposed by the podcast and host. The podcast does not fact-check information provided.